Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and Hotep. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'd like to say Habari Gani to my old friends and what's up to those new listeners. Come right in and have a seat. I invite you into my living room. I am your Empress, Omi Inca 7. I am the advisor you need and the advocate you want. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is our new 120-minute segment, and as the outline features show, we'll be featuring the Talking Cure, and we'll be talking with Attorney at Law. Today's guest is Cedric Braden, as well as Benny Mohammed, and as you know, our co-host, Maddie Harvey, and Dr. Jamel Harvey, our resident naturopathic doctor, will be with us as well. We're featuring this new show, Is Financial Literacy the Solution to College? Should we seek out financial solution or financial literacy first before we go tramping off to college? Learning how to handle money, making sure we understand the value of it. Let us go right into the talking queue for the benefits of time. I also want to say hello to my guests in the audience right now. Let me go to the phone lines and say hello to my guests. Okay. I'm going to caller number one. Caller number one, you're in the atmosphere. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. Who am I speaking to? Is this Mrs. Harvey?
Yes, it is.
Hello, Mrs. Harvey.
Hi, how are you today?
Stay put. Keep it right there. We'll be right back at you. Let me say hello to my next caller.
Garth?
Hello, caller number two. Hello.
How are you, Ms. Garth?
I'm just fine. Is this attorney, this is Benny Mohammed?
Yes, ma'am.
How you doing this evening, Mr. Mahoney?
I'm doing fine this evening, ma'am. Yourself?
Just great. We want you to join us in our Talking Cure. We do a segment called the Talking Cure where we do a ritual where we just uplift God, acknowledge Him, and allow the families and the audience to tap in. So stay tuned. We're going to commercial right now. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Stay tuned. Take five. Right. Seems like somebody stuck another song in there. Not one of my favorites. So stay tuned. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen. Going to commercial. having to find Nettie's teacher. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're going over to our talking care room. This is where we talk and speak about the issues in our family, and we bring about solutions to our problem. As we stand to our feet, this is the call to prayer. Call to prayer, and we stand with our hands facing up, calling each and every one of those who are in need to come to pray. Father, as we bow our heads before you, we ask that you would allow us to speak the things that you've called us to speak, and that you will begin to take control of our vocal cords, and that you will lead and guide us into all truth and understanding. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the frequency room where you can tap in and receive the gifts from God. This is where we call and ask the spirits to be present here today. For those who are yet in the lagoon that are traveling, in the middle passage, those who have left us and have gone on and made their transition, we acknowledge them because we know our ancestors never die, and it's their shoulders which we stand on. As we stand on their shoulders, we acknowledge them by pouring libation to the east, and we say Ashe. We pour libations to the west, and we say Ashe. We pour libations to the north, and we say Ashe. And finally, we pour libations to the south and say Ashe. I pour a glass of water for my father's spirit and invite his spirit in and say Ashe. I pour a glass of water for my mother's spirit and invite her essence in and say Ashe. I light a candle for my mother's spirit, acknowledging that this candle should light the way and guide her back to her family. I light a candle for my father's spirit in hopes that he will find his way home. Ladies and gentlemen, in like manners, periodically reconnect with God and take time aside to thank God for the great things that he's done for us and the many things that he has yet to do for us. Father, I sense that there are families that need healing. I sense that there are families that need a financial blessing. Each one of those families tap in, and at the sound of my voice, we ask that you will begin to make your petition known to God. May each and every one of your households be blessed richly, and may you begin to honor God and spend time supping with God. And we acknowledge all of those ancestors that have passed on before us, because we're the sum total of why they came. We say to God be the glory, and we say, Father God, please begin to open up our eyes so that we can see how to bridge our way back together as African people, as one people, not as separate, but as one people. May we make our brothers proud of our own, and may we embrace our brothers and sisters. We are our brother's keeper. Help us to remember that, Father. We thank you for the opportunity to be before you once again, and we say amen. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand that this being a spiritual room, we must take time out to acknowledge God. Before we do anything in this room, we must acknowledge our higher self. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us in the Care to Read room. In this Care to Read room, it's a new 120 minutes, and most of you have been able to enjoy those lengthy programs. Do we have a treat for you? We have designated specific times for each part of our show. As you know, the talking cure always occurs. We've now added a segment called Attorney at Law, and one of our guests is here to speak to us, Attorney Zedwick Braden. He will be here to speak to us on family law. He also has a concentrated area in a variety of different areas as well, but his concentration area is in the area of family law. Now, let me go to the phone lines to make sure I greet him. Good evening. Hello. Hello. Caller number 3. Can you hear me? Okay. It doesn't look like he has his phone up. Caller number 3, Attorney Zedwick Bray. Okay. Doesn't look like he has his phone up. We're going to give him some time to get his phone up. In the meantime, we're going to introduce our second guest. We have Mr. Muhammad, Benny Muhammad, here. And he is going to be speaking to us this evening about expungement and the workshops that he has scheduled throughout the city to assist and aid young men and women in the area of expungement. Take 5. I'm going to go to commercial.
Every day, from the moment I wake, there are thoughts that stay on my mind. Is there really a way to keep faith? In a heart that seems that our lives
Yes, yes, our faith is strong, and it is our ancestral song. We must remember that. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome our guest once again, Mr. Benny Muhammad, and also Attorney Braid. I hope Attorney Braid is out there. Let me try the phone lines again, see if this is Attorney Braid. Good evening. Caller number three, if you're out there, you can pick up your phone line. So maybe you're just listening. Okay, maybe we're still waiting on Attorney Braid. Let me go on to caller number two. I'm going to have Mr. Benny Muhammad come on and speak. Mr. Benny Muhammad is a longtime friend, and he has also been an advocate in the town of Indiana, Gary, Indiana, to be exact. As he has been working with a number of different projects, the one project that sticks out is the one that he works with the council, working with the men here in Indiana and Gary. He has been doing some expanded work, some work that leads into the school system that I've had a chance to work with him on, his wife and I as well. And Mr. Muhammad had explained to me that he was going to be doing a series of workshops on expungement, which I have very little knowledge about. However, Mr. Muhammad is from Gary, Indiana. He's a resident from Gary, Indiana, and he is also working very hard to make men aware of the services that he has to offer. And periodically, he does other influential things in the community as well. So I'm going to let him tell you those detailed projects that he's working on, as well as about his expungement program. I'm going to introduce you to Mr. Benny Muhammad. Benny Muhammad, you have the microphone. Welcome to the Gatorade Room.
Thank you, Ms. Garth. I am truly honored to be on your show tonight. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, ma'am. And good evening to our listening audience as well. I would just like to say a little bit, I would like to commend you on the great job that you've been doing with various projects that you've been lending yourself to. And I really appreciate your consistency. And you're doing a great job of just reaching out to individuals. And you've always been one that was an advocate for the downtrodden, the one that has the least bit of you've been a voice for the voiceless. I say it like that, Ms. Garth. And I just want to commend you and ask the God to continue to bless you for the good works that you do in our community.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. And in regard to the expungement informational forms that we are involved in, the Gary Commission on the Social Status of Black Males. This came about due to, in 2009, I was listening to 106.3, and there was a promotion going on, an edification of an event that Cook County Clerk, Honorable Dorothy Brown, her office was sponsoring an expungement summit, a full expungement summit. And I do know that felony backgrounds, criminal backgrounds, are plaguing individuals from benefits that may await them, such as, and I'm speaking about the black male in particular, in regards to employment, housing, some state-assisted projects that individuals would qualify for. Being a convicted felon would disqualify you from receiving that assistance. And so I attended Cook County Clerk Brown's expungement summit because I wanted to know, I wanted to see what her model looked like. And I was fortunate enough to be introduced to her that day and told her what my desire was I was in Chicago to take a look at her model in hopes that we would be able to come back to Gary and duplicate that. And she told me that if we were to pursue that, that her office would be willing to lend their support behind us. I called a meeting in the summer of 2009. I called a meeting, almost a year went by, and I called a meeting in Gary, and I invited state representatives, judges, attorneys from the Kimball Bar Association, and community activists, and we had a room full of people showed up that day, and I invited Honorable Dorothy Brown to come and be our keynote speaker. And she addressed the expungement summit and how she became involved in that and how the baton was passed to her from Congressman Danny Davis. And she shared with us some of her trials and, you know, in making that and to being able to take it to the next level. And from that meeting, we called it a roundtable discussion here locally in Gary, and we determined that this was something that we wanted to pursue. I met with Cook County Clerk Honorable Dorothy Brown again after that meeting. I met with her again early this year in her office downtown Chicago, and we had a telephone conversation with and we included on that call the late County Clerk Michael Brown, Honorable Michael Brown, and we determined from that conference call with Honorable Dorothy Brown that what we should do in Indiana would be, before we attempt to stage an expungement summit, because the masses of our people are not educated on the expungement legislation, she recommended that we do a series of expungement informational forums. And so my organization, the Gary Commission on the Social Status of Black Males, you know, we came together and formed planning committees, and we determined that we would do this. And so as a result of that, we have a forum scheduled in June at the Boys and Girls Club. That actually is next Saturday, Saturday after next, June 18th, at the Boys and Girls Club in Gary at 225 West Fifth Avenue. We have one scheduled in July in East Chicago at the Boys and Girls Club on July 16th. We have one scheduled in Maryville at the Maryville Town Hall on August the 13th, and one in Hammond at the Hammond Boys and Girls Club on September the 17th. Now, this is what we're proposing to do. We will have attorneys that will present the expungement legislation to those in attendance. This is what the attorneys are requesting, that the individuals in attendance who are seeking relief or those who have criminal backgrounds, that they go to the jurisdiction where they were arrested. The first step would be, and this would simplify it, would be if the individual would just go online to the IndianaStatePolice.com website and click on criminal background. They would then be able to print out to purchase a copy of the criminal background. It would be statewide, no matter what county they received that they had an arrest or a conviction in. That report will list the entire state, all activities in the whole state, based upon, you know, their arrest or convictions. Then they could go to that jurisdiction. Say, for instance, if it was Lake County Jail, they could go to the Lake County Jail and request a copy of their criminal background from that jail. The reason that they're being requested to do this is because the attorneys are just dealing with actual facts, and they know that oftentimes individuals may forget an arrest that they had. And they come in and they bring information from one arrest that they had from a particular county, and then there may be an arrest or arrest from other counties that they forgot about or neglected to bring that information in. And so they won't be given the correct information on how to pursue this. And so that's why they were encouraged. They're being encouraged. And we're encouraging them to go to the IndianaStatePolice.com website and to get that criminal background report. And that will let them know all the counties that they've ever been arrested in. And so that's a starting point. And then from that point, the attorneys would be able to address their needs and let them know what they qualify for. Additionally, with juveniles, most juvenile convictions can be expunged. However, this does not happen automatically when you turn 21 years of age. Oftentimes, individuals I've heard have stated that I had some stuff. They call it stuff. Stuff happened to me way back, you know, when I was a shorty, a juvenile, you know, and they're under the impression that this has been removed from their record. The majority of the time it can be removed, but again, the individual has to petition for that to be removed from their record, and it's not a difficult process. You just have to know what steps to take. So all of that will be addressed at the forum. And we are looking forward to a great turnout on Saturday, June the 18th, and we would hope that, you know, everybody listening tonight would please share that information because, you know, this would be plentiful. We've scheduled the workshops, the forums in four different cities, so that if an individual is not able to make the forum in Gary, perhaps they can catch the one in East Chicago, Hammond, or Maryville, and vice versa. It will be the same information given out at all the forums. Additionally, at the Gary forum, we've already confirmed we will have the medical staff from the Gary Health Department will be present to administer HIV testing, blood pressure, and glucose screening as well, no charge. And additionally, there is no charge for the consultation and the guidance that the attorneys will be given on June the 18th at the forum. So we believe that this will be beneficial. You know, with the recidivism rate nearing 70% nationally, you know, we just felt like we came under conviction to assist the ex-felons in Lake County by educating them on the Indiana expungement legislation. Also, on July 1st, there's a new act that will become effective. That's called the Enrolled Act, House Bill 1211, which will give even more relief to individuals who have misdemeanor convictions and Class B felony convictions. Okay, it's a big jump from where we are right now with Indiana State expungement legislation, and to what will be made available to individuals as of July 1st. So you definitely want to be there, and if you know of anybody, family members, friends, please direct them into that direction. Again, that address on June 18th, from 12 to 5 p.m. is the Boys and Girls Club of Northwest Indiana, and that address is 225 West 5th Avenue. That's directly across the street from the main library on 5th Avenue.
Mr. Muhammad, we want to thank you for that valuable information. My question is, with all the sequence of the workshops, do you have to attend each one, or are these standalone workshops where once you attend the first one, it is not necessary to attend all of the various different locations?
No, ma'am, standalone. It will be the same information will be disseminated at each workshop.
Very good. We
just want to cover all the bases and make it available for, you know, what we would like to say. I don't want to offend anybody, but, you know, just the core group right in this area right here in Lake County. You know, we just don't have the capacity to move all over Lake County, so we just selected those four cities, Gary, Hammond, East Chicago, and Maryville.
Now, Mr. Muhammad, what can the clergy do in an effort to make this a massive effort for movement? Because I would think that the facilities that you have, the capacity would be a problem, but can this be duplicated in the clergy with various different congregations who can duplicate this so this can be done in massive workshops?
Okay. I would think so. I would think that this would be, you know, this would be, we could have a snowball effect from this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the clergy, of course, has the capacity to get this out to the people in mass numbers.
Absolutely.
You know, with the different, Baptist organizations, you know, this could grow into something real large, you know, and it's definitely needed. You know, and I'm glad you raised that point, because this Sunday would be an excellent opportunity for, and I'm going to make some more phone calls between now and then to, what I would term as certain key pastors, you know, who have a wide wingspan, you know, in regards to their influence and in the community and their connection with other pastors in the community. And, you know, ask them to please alert their congregation and ask their congregation to alert the individuals that they know, because you got, you know, there's so many individuals that have criminal backgrounds and, you know, and they're being stopped in their tracks because all these various, you know, job applications, the question is on the first page. Have you ever been arrested or convicted of a crime?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it says more serious than a traffic violation, you know? And so, you know, another initiative that we're looking at is, I'll leave that alone at this time until I get clarity on it, but I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Mr. Muhammad, it seems as if one would think that because this crippling effect on our African-American men, a large portion of them who have gone through rehabilitation already in the penal institution are double taxed when they come out in their insurance, in their effort to make purchases, in their credit. So this demon follows them all their life, and they become even more crippled, puts them back in the category for eventually being someone that would go out and commit a crime and end up back in the penal institution. So as an effort to prevent the repeated behaviors of someone having to do a crime in order to get back to work, I think that it should be on the hearts of many men and women who are working in social service to look at, have we truly found that these men have been rehabilitated, and what can we do further to help them feel like I'm a citizen again, I paid my dues, now I'm on the right track, I would like for positions that I'm qualified for to be available to me, but yet there's so many black men who have had to carry that massive weight all over again in their life, knowing that they can't provide for their family. And everyone knows that if a man can't provide for his family, it is obvious that he might result to a life of crime. And is this a setup in our society? And what can we do to intervene before those young men exit out of prison to talk about transitioning these people? And as a transition product, that they would have some committees go right into the prison to take those young men and women right to the process of cleaning their records up. Because some men and women don't know this exists, and they spend a lifetime looking for solutions and ways to clean up their criminal background. But if this was a part of transitioning, as well as a church going in to minister, they can take this into the prison institutes when they make their transition. So I feel that if we could go into the churches and not sound on deaf ears, but speak to the ministers who have these missionaries that are going into the church.
Well, unfortunately, Ms. Gard, Indiana is one of the states that offers the least bit of relief for individuals with felony convictions. Ohio and Kentucky being two of the states that offer the greatest amount of relief to individuals with criminal backgrounds. You said, what can we do? We can come together in numbers, and then we can go to our state representatives and our state and push new legislation and get our representatives to represent us, to represent the wishes of the people, the demands of the people that they have been appointed to represent and carry our concerns downstate. We have to come together in numbers, but there's not enough of us that show a great enough concern to even come together on incidents like this. Check out this. The Indiana Department of Correction, the total number of individuals the Indiana Department of Corrections released from jail from the year 2005 to 2008 into our communities was 57,578 males, 9,319 females, 4,180 juvenile males, and 921 juvenile females. Now, those were released. The total number of individuals the Indiana Department of Correction admitted into prison between 2005 and 2008 into the correctional facilities are 48,489 males, 8,413 females, 3,522 juvenile males, and 699 juvenile females. You know, those numbers are staggering, you know, and it's like a revolving door, you know? It's like a revolving door. But again, you know, we have to come together, and we have to get the attention of our community.
Absolutely.
You know, like, for instance, you know, the city of Gary is so desolate, you know, and it's just like we have gone to sleep, and we're not really, you can just look at the numbers of individuals that turn out of the polls on election day.
Well, let me give you some case in points of some other things that we have been doing to possibly alleviate some of these problems. We ran a complete program for 1 month on pro se for those young men who do have the intelligence to go and search statutes and look at case law and who can represent themselves in a court of law and have the ability to meet those filing deadlines. We've offered a pro se program where they can access membership into Rocket legal system and purchase their forms and get involved with working with pro bono lawyers to assist them. Most of what I see happening, Brother Muhammad, is they have no representation. And if a public defender is assigned to them, that public defender has vested interest in the state because he's being paid by the state. We need to get the message out to young men and women and to their families, do not take a public defender. Usually, you are ready. They're going to make you work a deal. They're going to ask you to take some sort of deal, even when you might want to go to trial. Now, trial law is very expensive, we know, but we have a large amount of brothers and sisters taking a plea bargain, even for first initial offense, and finding that their records have become damaged, even with the lesser plea bargain. If they had access to proper representation and possibly pro bono, that's what we're trying to do on this show, gather low-income attorneys as well as pro bono. So we will have a massive pool of attorneys that will be willing to do what some of what Legal Aid is not doing or NAACP. Because we used to take cases with NAACP and work them, because I've worked them for many, many years. Now you don't hear of it. They're too overburdened. But if we create pools of attorneys that are willing to take low-cost cases or assist them under pro bono or pro se, we can help a large percent of these young men and women that are going into prison for the first time. And what is really affecting is now we've got a number of different young brothers and sisters being stopped on a DWI or DUI, and the real issue is when you stop that person and give them the breathalyzer, it is only an estimate. It cannot gauge or accurately give you the blood count of the blood alcohol level, but yet they're taking young people to jail based on an estimate. And they never challenge it, but it can be challenged in a court of law. And the probable causes as to why they were stopped can also be challenged and many times overturned. But yet these brothers and sisters are taking these particular raps on the basis of the fact that we can make some money. And they don't investigate. They don't get any attorney to do a massive research and investigation internally on rookie officers. Sometimes these officers are not even credentialed to give the breathalyzer. They must be certified, and that machine must have a calibrate date on it when it was last calibrated. And if these issues are not in place, these cases can be thrown out of court. But yet our brothers and sisters are getting convictions right out of college with DWIs, which means they lose all of their funding. They then have a rap that they can lose their license for 5 years. It's devastating. And yet we're sitting back looking at this saying, we want a public defender. And we got good lawyers that can help us in these court of laws and trial law. Now, I have a young lawyer here that I'd like to introduce you to, and I think he was one of the brothers that answered the call. His name is Cedric Zedrick, Z-E-D-R-I-C-K, Braden III. He's from Chicago, Illinois. He's a third-generation lawyer. He graduated from Thurgood Marshall, as well as Texas Southern in Houston. His father was a lawyer who he worked with for over 20 years. His grandfather was a lawyer. He also graduated in law. And his brother is a patent lawyer. He's a third-generation lawyer. He's married, has two children. Two of his sons are going, one of his sons is going off to college, and one has already graduated. Now, this brother came to me highly recommended from an organization called Kappa Alpha Psi. They wanted me to meet him, and I immediately reservoired with his spirit that he's a caring, loving person. And it takes a caring, loving person to deal with details and work in law. And if you don't have that, you might as well get out of the business. I worked in law for over 30 years for lawyers in Chicago. And if you don't love people, you really can't do this work. I sensed that he had the desire to be an advocate. And I invite him on the show today. And I hope Zedrick, Attorney Zedrick, is here. Let me check the phone line. Excuse me, people. Go to the phone lines and call in at 646-478-0270. Stay tuned. Let me see if this is Attorney Bray. Hello? Is this Attorney Bray? How are you doing,
yes,
Attorney
Bray? Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Just fine. We're so glad you could make it. I just introduced you and basically told the audience what a loving person you were. Your spirit permeated across the airways. That's how powerful you are. Ladies and gentlemen, I gave you Attorney Bray.
Thank you so much. I've been listening for the last 20 minutes, and I've just thoroughly enjoyed listening to you and Brother Muhammad.
Okay. We're going to ask you, Attorney Bray, to give us a little background about your experience as a concentrated family law. I know that there are other areas of law that you work in as well. Tell us a little bit about your civil rights movement in the criminal defense area, because that's what I was very interested in. And tell us how you could get involved with this movement that Brother Muhammad is talking about, gathering lawyers together to assist and aid him in the expungement program.
Thank you so very much, and greetings to you both. I've been a practicing attorney in Illinois since 1985. I'm only licensed to practice in Illinois, but these are issues that affect us all because we're all in this together. What you and Brother Muhammad have talked about this evening is just it is so vital. And I've worked with I've been a cooperating attorney with NAACP over the years, worked in with organizations, community organizations on the south side, north side, and west side of Chicago. And my family, it's been a family tradition of mine, the practice of law since 1905. And I'm just so thankful to God that I've made your acquaintance. And listening to Brother Muhammad is just so very inspirational to me. And just so happy to have a passion for helping our young brothers and sisters, certainly our African-American brothers and sisters and brothers and sisters of all colors, because this situation is epidemic in this country. You know, it's just terrible to see the numbers of young people and people of all ages going to jail, coming out, being unable to get jobs, and they're just suffering or year in and year out being unable to lift this tremendous burden. And,
you know,
Attorney
Braid, I wanted you to speak on black laws a little bit, because I am sensing that in the civil rights movement and right after we came out of the Jim Crow era, there was abundant of black laws that never came off the book, that if African Americans were caught out on the road at the beginning of the month without employment, they could be incarcerated. If they were caught playing games with Caucasian people, they could be incarcerated. So there was a lot of laws impeded on us that never really came off the book. Can you elaborate on that at all?
You know, most certainly. Certainly in many parts of the country, when the civil rights movement, as it gained magnitude, many of those laws were left on the books. Places like Texas, Kentucky, even in parts of Illinois, you have those laws that are still on the books. And even though they are effectively dead, you have situations where, unfortunately, some areas of law enforcement still oppress people. For instance, one in particular is the, as we know, the one where people are stopped because they're black, brown, while black. You know, the situations where there's racial profiling. So all of those conditions are the result of those laws still being on the books. And then you have certain law enforcement. They are not properly sensitized to understand how to relate to people of other cultures. So it's a tremendous burden. But yes, ma'am, those laws are still on the books in many states, and it's a real problem.
It's a real problem. And, you know, attorney, the other thing I wanted you to elaborate on that young black brothers and sisters need to know about is, in the event that a defendant, or shall I say, a candidate for probation is stopped and they're on probation while incurring a new charge, there is something called a 15-day hold, which means that you can invoke a bond and prevent that person from bonding himself out for 15 days. Now, there's still a bond, but they put the hold on it so that you cannot be moved. You have like a stay put order, and that 15-day runs its course. But from what I gather in the statute, after that 15-day course has ran, at that particular point, if no one has invoked your probation, you are free to leave on your own cognizance. That's what the statutes read. So I'm concerned about judges who do not allow you to leave on your own cognizance and lock you back up even after your 15th day. Is that a violation?
Well, you know, now, in of course, I could only speak to the laws of Illinois. But certainly, Ms. Garth, what is so disturbing is, historically, the setting of a bond was to ensure that the accused would return to court.
Absolutely.
However, what has happened, the bond is being used as a punishment. In other words, a person will be brought in by the prosecutor's office. And rather than setting the bond to ensure that someone will return to court, the bond is being used to judge the person before they've even had a trial.
Absolutely.
And that is why you have situations where the bonds for, say, a young man who is Caucasian who commits the same crime, his bond will be less than an African-American young man. And you have that prejudging of a person before they've even had a trial. So it's disheartening, it's unfair, and it happens across the country.
Now, my question again is, now, a judge knowing this can usually use this to her advantage to make that young man think, I have the authority to hold you here, when in fact she doesn't have that authority because the law is really stating that even she has to release that person on their own cognizance and post a bond if there is no invoking of his probation. Now, how does she come back and say, well, I'm going to invoke your probation if the probation officer says, I have no problem with you, you can continue on with your probation? Seems like that is an oxymoron. And if your probation officer is in agreement, why wouldn't the judge be in agreement? Because that's the recommendation that the probation officer makes to the judge in the first place.
You know, you raise a very important point. It's important for the public to realize that judges are people. They make mistakes. Now you have many fine judges, but you have judges who get on the bench and they make errors, judgment. They have character problems. And Ms. Garth, that is why it's so very important that people give serious consideration to voting. Judicial elections are a must.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's an abuse of discretion for any number of reasons, racism, sexism, a judge coming to court having a bad day, maybe having an argument at home with his wife, bringing all that to the courtroom. But they're people like anybody else. And what it saddens me, it's a real threat to our freedom to have people on the bench like that, and there being no additional safeguards
Absolutely.
To evaluate these people before they get on the bench. Now, of course, I'm getting into an entirely different area, but to go back to your question, it's a situation where judges make mistakes, and it costs people of all cultures and ages tremendous hardships because of what goes on in the court system.
Now, Attorney Bray, can you tell us, the audience, anything about work release and what exactly is work release and how is it used? Is it used for the defendant to go out to his own job and go to work or to their classes, or is it set up for that county to utilize that person to work anywhere on their campus instead of really trying to pursue a job?
You know, work release, it has its pluses and minuses. Now, in some situations where someone is accused, they have a family, it can be used to allow a person to pay their debt to society while at the same time support their family. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you've had situations where there's been work release and there might have been some political aspects to it. I know locally one of the politicians on the Illinois side is accused of using work release inmates for improper campaign purposes. So you've had some abuses, but historically it has been to allow a person to pay the debt to society and at the same time support the family.
Absolutely.
So that's historically how it's been used. But you have you've had various combinations of that. You know, sometimes in throughout the country, the statute changes for a number of reasons. A lot of times, the sheer volume of the prison population mandates that people be released. They just don't have enough room to hold all those people. They got to let them out.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you can call in, we have Attorney Braden. Am I pronouncing your name right? Attorney Braden.
Braden.
Attorney Braden in the atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen. You certainly want to call in. We're going to lock in those phone lines at 646-478-0270. We're going to commercial. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Stay tuned.
Rosa Parks. This is for the Pullman Porters, who organized when people said they couldn't, and carried the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender to the black Americans in the South so that they would know they were not alone. This is for the Pullman Porters, who helped Thurgood Marshall go south and come back north to fight the fight that resulted in Brown versus Board of Education. Because even though Kansas is west, and even though Topeka is the birthplace of Gwendolyn Brooks, who wrote The Power for the Chicago Defender sends a man to Little Rock, it was the Pullman Porters who whispered to the traveling men, both the blues men and the race men, so that they would both know what was going on. This is for the Pullman Porters who smiled as if they were happy and laughed like they were tickled when some folk were around, and who silently rejoiced in 1954 when the Supreme Court announced its 9-0 decision that separate is inherently unequal. This is for the Pullman Porters who smiled and welcomed a 14-year-old boy onto their train in 1955. They noticed his slight limp that he tried to disguise with a doo-wop walk. They noticed his stutter and probably understood why his mother wanted him out of Chicago during the summer when school was out. 14-year-old black boys with limps and stutters are apt to try to prove themselves in dangerous ways when mothers aren't around to look after them. So this is for the Pullman Porters who looked over that 14-year-old while the train rolled the reverse of the Blues Highway from Chicago to St. Louis to Memphis to Mississippi. This is for the men who kept him safe. And if Emmett Till had been able to stay on that train all summer, he would have maybe grown a bit of a paunch, certainly lost his hair, probably have worn bifocals and bounced his grandchildren on his knee, telling them about his summer riding the rails. But he had to get off that train and ended up in Money, Mississippi, and was horribly, brutally, inexcusably, and unacceptably murdered. This is for the Pullman Porters who, when the sheriff was trying to get that body secretly buried, got Emmett's body on the northbound train, got his body home to Chicago, where his mother said, "I want the world to see what they did to my boy." And this is for all the mothers who cried. And this is for all the people who said, "Never again." And this is about Rosa Parks, whose feet were not so tired. It had been, after all, an ordinary day, until the bus driver gave her the opportunity to make history. This is about Mrs. Rosa Parks from Tuskegee, Alabama, who was also the field secretary of the NAACP. This is about the moment Rosa Parks shouldered her cross, put her worldly goods aside, and was willing to sacrifice her life so that that young man in Money, Mississippi, who had been so well protected by the Pullman porters, would not have died in vain. When Mrs. Parks said no, a passionate movement was begun. No longer would there be a reliance on the law, there was a higher law. When Mrs. Parks brought that light of hers to expose the evil of the system, the sun came and rested on her shoulders, bringing the heat and light of truth. Others would follow Mrs. Parks. Poor young men in Greensboro, North Carolina, would also say no. Great voices would be raised, singing the praises of God and exhorting us to forgive those who trespass against us. But it was the Pullman porters who safely got Emmett to his granduncle, and it was Mrs. Rosa Parks who could not stand that death. And in not being able to stand it, she sat back down.
Ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to sit back down as we stage this passionate movement. You want to be a part of every moment of it. There is a crisis in our economic status, and there's a crisis in the black homes today. We're possibly going to become a permanent underclass if we don't gain wealth between now and the next 21st century. We're going to be locked in, ladies and gentlemen. And I pose the question, is financial literacy the solution to our college problem? Do we put our children in college without preparing them for financial literacy so that they can decipher when they invest over $50,000 in a college education, what kind of outcome will they obtain in a position? Can they obtain a position making more than what they paid for the college degree? And once they get these funds in college from FAFSA, like the Pell Grant and the unsubsidized loan, do they know how to manage the money and balance their checkbook? What I'm challenging you, ladies and gentlemen, mothers and fathers in the home, the school year is out now, and your students have plenty of time to take a course in junior achievement. They're free. They're right online. You can download them, parents. Work with your children in learning how to teach them how to balance a checkbook and do the percentages of their discount. Show them how to take their coupons and use them and to budget the balance in your home and potentially in their own homes. It's very important that we get a handle on our spending and how we train our young children, because money can go to some young children's head. When they go off to college and get their refund check, they can become futile with it and spend it properly, or they could become wasteful. It's like a loaded gun. Money is frequency, ladies and gentlemen, and you have to call that filthy lucre to you and control it, because you're a steward over it and nothing else. We would like for you to join us as we partner with Junior Achievement to work with financial literacy for the month of June. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere as we go back to our callers. I want to remind you that this is the Care to Read Room, and we astute you to literacy, reading, and including literacy and rich materials in your home. We are here to guide you in all areas of family life. We are a family and consumer organization bringing you economics, home economics, as well as giving you good literacy. Today is joining us on the show are two very important people who are staging this effort for that passionate road that we're about to take and opening up the law so that we are not stagnant in the law, but we have access to it and we can begin to use pro se, adjudicating our problems and find low-income lawyers like Attorney Bray, as well as utilize pro bono. That's what it's about, ladies and gentlemen, helping yourself. This is self-help. Let's go back to the phone lines, and I'd like to get Mr. Muhammad involved here and see where we are with this expungement. Mr. Muhammad, are you in the atmosphere?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Muhammad, I have a few more questions for you because we want to get Attorney Braid involved in what you're doing with those lawyers. One of the things I wanted to know is that if we are going to solicit for lawyers and bringing them on board, you're going to need plenty of lawyers to help you to continue with these workshops. Am I right? Or how are you proposing to introduce it? Is it through the attorneys, or do you have other people introducing the program?
Well, actually, the attorney that I had met with, he had stated that basically at this point in the process that all we want to do is to inform, enlighten the people on what the expungement legislation is in Indiana, okay?
Okay.
And determine from those who attend the forum who's qualified for relief. Everybody won't be qualified for relief, okay? Unfortunately,
right.
You know, in Indiana, there is a time span in most instances where an individual would have to go for a period of time without any new arrest before he or she would be eligible for an expungement.
Brother Muhammad, let me make an assertion here. I remember you and I talked about those years, one being 15 years, which was under the old law, but you talked about a potential new year, which would allow you to have only 8 years of having a new charge. Can you expound upon that a bit so the listening audience could understand exactly what's going on with these years?
Okay, yes, ma'am. But even before we get to that, in section IC 35-38-5-1, in section 1, whenever an individual is arrested but no criminal charges are filed against the individual, or 2, all criminal charges filed against an individual are dropped because one of three reasons: of a mistaken identity, B, no offense in fact was committed, or C, there was an absence of probable cause, the individual may petition the court for expungement of the records related to the arrest.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now,
say that last part, there was an absence of probable causes?
Absence of probable cause. If it's determined right that there was no probable cause, then that's grounds for expungement.
Okay.
After it goes
now,
to trial.
What happens if they're in a court of law, and this is not after the fact, this is prior to them being charged, where they're in front of the judge, and the judge asks, what were you pulled over for? And if you indicate to her there was no probable charges and they can't find any probable charges, at that particular point, can that person be exonerated and charges be dropped as well?
Okay. If who would the defendant?
Now, I'm speaking of someone who is going to court currently for something like that, rather than it being after the fact. Can they also pose to the judge that there was no probable causes for the policeman to stop me and give me the ticket in the first place? And because they'll ask, what were you pulled over for? And they'll say, well, I don't know. And then if there was no probable causes in that event, can they also plead with the judge to say that there was no probable causes, and can I have this thrown out? Is
okay,
what I'm asking you.
Because I am not an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Not licensed to practice law. I'm not able to even, you know, give them.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. We have a lawyer here in the room. We're going to go to our lawyer and pose that question. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to remind you, we are not a member of the bar. Attorney Muhammad and I, even though we cite cases and we give you statutes, please know that we have a lawyer amongst us who can research the statutes, and he is a member of the bar. So we want to take advantage of his presence here. Let me go to the phone lines with Attorney Braden. Attorney Braden, can you give us some information on that?
Well, you know what, Dean, and I want to just clarify, of course, I'm only licensed to practice law in Illinois, but I can comment on the procedure in Illinois, and usually that is followed by most of the other states throughout the country.
Great.
And Ms. Garth, what was that question one more time?
Okay. Brother Muhammad said that he gave three examples, A, B, and C, and he talked about someone having their records expunged if there was no probable causes to convict that person, then they can ask to have that offense expunged.
And you know, that is exactly what happens on the Illinois side. And I'm pretty certain that is the case in Indiana as well, although I would advise anyone to contact a licensed Indiana attorney to verify this. But generally, if a person is released and they've been arrested and the court finds that there was no probable cause, then that certainly on the Illinois side, the charges are dropped. In that instance, in Illinois, that person would be entitled to have that arrest expunged because there was no charge. Now, usually in Illinois, with regard to misdemeanors, it's usually a 2-year wait. Also on the Illinois side, it's possible for a person to get a pardon from the Illinois governor. That's something we've been doing on a regular basis over there.
How lengthy is that? Is that very, very lengthy to get that pardon?
Usually there are it can be a lengthy process. However, the great thing is a person, even if they don't get a pardon the first time around, they can continue to seek to get a pardon. Usually the governor's clemency board, usually it's also known as the Illinois Prisoners Review Board, and that board is a collection of people from across the state of Illinois who are appointed by the governor, and they hear those petitions, and their real concern is what a person is doing presently, not what happened in the case, but how they have been rehabilitated, what their contributions to the society are. But going back to your question, yes, there is in situations where charges are dropped and where there has been a finding of no probable cause, that person would usually be entitled to an expungement very quickly.
Very quickly. Now, Attorney Beard, the other thing I wanted to ask you is that we have been talking in this room quite a bit about being a sovereign nation, and there are a number of things that Dr. Ray Hagen had pointed out to us about the fact that we have joined this government system by virtue of allowing ourselves to use certain names, Social Security numbers, and when we present our paperwork, we have not presented ourselves as a sovereign nation. And when and if we decide to wake up, whenever that is, then we can realize that we are not governed up under certain systems based on the sovereignty. Can you speak to anything in reference to sovereignty issues being on the table or the nation of various different Native Americans who are working with these sovereignties? And are you familiar with any of these new found programs?
I have been coming across a lot of discussions concerning those sovereign issues. One thing that we have to deal with, and this is since 9/11, that Patriot Act affected a lot of those issues. And most notably, let me discuss the situation involving Native Americans. Now, of course, those were the original people from this country, and to have them be treated as they have had historically. Finally, there has been a recognition as to what they've gone through and what rights they have had. I mean, we have so much. African Americans have so much in common with people and the other peoples in that situation. But going back to the issue of a sovereign nation concept, there are discussions about that. There have always been discussions about that, but we don't hear about it as much as we should. And I think probably there needs to be a lot more activism toward that, because historically, we were brought to this country when you're born here, you're given a number, and you're just another number. And people don't realize they have rights, and the Constitution, as it was written, let's face it, it was not written for black people. It was
that's right.
For the white colonists who came.
Also, Attorney Bray, if you can elaborate on that 14th Amendment, which had to be ratified, and when we thought we actually had our freedom under that 14th Amendment, we still don't have our freedom under that 14th Amendment. That's another issue that needs to be addressed.
You know, you're right, and there's so many provisions of the Constitution which they are glanced over by our elected representatives. You know, the history is historically most of those constitutional amendments, when they were passed, they were the result of lobbying, backbiting, in many instances, they're not being enforced the way they should be enforced. You've had intervening statutes that have come into play. You've had war acts like Patriot Act, which, you know, just clearly violates people's rights and puts a real a damper on what those amendments really were intended to cover. But you're absolutely right.
And Attorney Bray, I'm hoping that more attorneys have consultation and sit-ins and seminars and workshops to elaborate on these things, just such as what we're doing, that will give them some opportunity to see if these things can be challenged in a court of law or through our Senate, because there's
right.
definitely a large amount of African Americans who are fitted to work in law and who can work under other aspects of government programs to assist and aid a bill and getting bills passed. It is so much that Caucasians lobby for, and they're nothing
right.
but advocates, and we can do the same thing.
We certainly can, and you know, without mentioning the name online during this program, I'm aware of a bar association on the Illinois side, and its membership is really unaware of the fact that it actually is a lobbying arm. They accept these dues, and they're lobbying on issues that the membership is actually unaware of. But yeah, our communities nationwide, our young people need to be made aware of their legal rights. They need to understand our history as a people as it relates to this country. And quite frankly, I think the schools need to concentrate. They need to actually add what we've been talking about this evening with regard to expungements, pardons, and like that actually needs to be added to a segment of educational curriculum.
Absolutely.
Because, some people might say, well, look, it's not important, but it's very important because.
Very, yes, yeah. It is.
Yes, ma'am.
It is so important, Attorney Braden, that the young average young man cannot afford to leave the house with not being embraced with this information and knowledge, because it could cost him his life. A one night evening out could be the last night for one or two young people. And it's all because they feel that when they do go and say, I like an investigation, the first thing
right.
they say is, we're going to appoint you a public defender. And a public
right.
defender doesn't want to launch an investigation. He wants to get on with the thing and do the plea bargain, just do the doggone thing and get you out of the situation. And young people buy into that and say, well, he said he was going to get me a plea bargain and I get to go home. So during that time, they won't let adults or family members intervene if that child is over 22. They then tell you
right.
that they are of the age of consent and you have nothing to say. They take that child in the back room and there's a plea bargain that takes place. We've got to do
right.
something about these plea bargains that these young people are taking, not realizing they're damaging their records.
You know, over the years, I've constantly preached to people that have come to me for help. do not make a statement outside of the presence of an attorney. Don't plead guilty to something you didn't do. Okay. And, you know, over and over again, we see this situation. And you know, the people are told when they are brought in that they have a right. Usually they're told, hopefully they're told by the arrested officer or the detaining officer, that they have a right to remain silent, and anything they say may be used against them. But they need to add, anything they may say will be used against them based upon the police officer's interpretation. And that's the key word.
Okay.
And people sometimes, when the young people are stopped, they're afraid. And in many instances, police officers might say, well, look, if you talk to me, we'll go easy on you. It'll help you out. But it won't.
Uh-huh.
And over again, so many people in the country, they have records because, just as you accurately pointed out, they are forced or they are coerced into entering into a plea for a crime that they had nothing to do with. And there they
Absolutely.
Are stuck on their record.
Absolutely. And it's sad. It is so sad because here the public defender comes. I'm at
right.
your dispense. I'm your advocate. He is
right.
working with the DA. He's on the payroll.
Sure.
He has a vested interest into taking as many cases as he can for as less as he can. And he doesn't even have to take the files home to read the cases. And sometimes, impromptu, he's just meeting his client and he's trying to work a deal.
And
so
you
it
see,
is so
and
sad.
This is absolutely correct. And you know, it's important. We are going to have to change the climate of the criminal justice system. People's rights are not being protected. Now, we have a lot of discussions about national security. Well, when any citizen is treated less than a citizen, when any citizen's rights are violated, when any citizen is forced to plead guilty or persuaded to plead guilty when he's not, in my opinion, that is a threat to our national security, because
yes,
our young are being shackled
mm-hmm.
with records that they don't deserve. They're being charged and convicted of crimes that they had no involvement in.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that the school system can do something about this. In their
sure.
government economic classes or in their social studies classes, what have you, they could launch an effort to go in to the system, because they do from time to time run micro schools and micro cities, and they operate just like a jurisdictional system in their classroom. But they could even do a better job in allowing these children to launch internships, be a part of the system, see what's going on in the system, because truly, you know, you are guilty until proven innocent. And in the state of Indiana, when you go in, you're assumed to be guilty. And most of these young people that go in don't realize that when you go in, you need to be sworn in. The judge has no
right.
business cross-examining you without you being sworn in and having proper rights to a representation. She must ask you, do you have access to purchase an attorney, or if you do not, we will appoint you a public defender. But if she cross-examines you and swears you in, you don't have proper representation.
And Ms. Garth,
that goes,
you know,
on all the time.
That situation exists in Indiana, and it exists all across the country. I would stake my reputation on this. We need a reversal. I am so tired and so alarmed at seeing our young people filling the system. Like, for instance, tomorrow morning I have to start a trial over at 26th in California in Cook County. And that courthouse, that complex is a small city in itself. It is enormous. And we are just going – and I want to just – and you are just such a blessing. I just want to commend the fine work that you do. And this program certainly will help the fight to preserve the justice for all of us. So I just want to commend you, and it's just a pleasure appearing on your program.
Thank you so much. And you know, I know you have a heart for what you're doing, because what happens concerns you. There are a number of attorneys can go on with their day's work and chop it up as being a part of the territory. But when you become sensitive and it really is next to home for you, you can then begin to look at some programs and what we can do to alleviate some of the stress off of the families. Because truly, the families go through the same thing that the child is going through, and that's what we have. You know, breeding off of the young people and their ignorance, and we know ignorance is no excuse of the law, but at the same time, it becomes a racket. And I don't know who in their right minds could have said that the Native Americans created this law, and yet we were involved with the Native Americans structuring their social life, but yet we have no access into the entry of the law or any access into helping to run the judicial system. And nobody questions it. If you have enough money,
you know,
we
are going to have to teach our young people to be advocates, to be, and again, I want to use the word passion, to be passionately involved in this country, to be passionately involved with protecting our rights, caring about each other. You know, I don't want to show my age here. You know, I'm a fan of today's music, but at the same time, I am into supporting things that are meaningful that young people can pick up ideas from.
Absolutely.
So it's just so important. And you know, we're all in this together. I have two sons that I love dearly, and my wife and I, we try to inspire them. And I don't take anything for granted. It's just so important that there's no substitute for parents being involved with their young people, helping them through this life, dealing with these laws, dealing with concepts,
but
encouraging them to vote. I could go on and on and on.
Attorney Bray, let me insert something here where we really have to really put some light in on the picture here. The universities, I've noticed, have come up with all of these rights, and the OSHA rights and the privacy law. So what is happening here is a quiet kept secret where the universities are taking the youngsters in and saying, look, you're an independent free spirit,
right,
and you don't have to resort to what your mother and father are saying. We don't have to give them any information on you. As a matter of fact, we won't give them any information on you to protect your privacy. It's a certain extent that you protecting this privacy and at the same time violating the parent. In some of these universities here in Indiana, you can't go in and make a public phone call to your child, and there is no access into that child's ward or his room, and literally you are told that you can't get in after a certain time. You're locked out. You drove maybe 2 hours to get to that university, and the doors are locked.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they can't accommodate you with an inline to call your child, but yet they call you to say, come on and make this payment over here. We need your filthy loofah. So we've got some problems with this privacy stuff when they're giving these children false indication that they got all this privacy, and they're hiding things from you, won't tell you about what's going on the campuses. So they're aiding these young people with a foolish sense that they have authority over their lives, when in fact it's a false sense of security. And we're sitting here fighting with the housing director to say, I need to get a message to my child. This is unheard of.
And you know, you are, and I've been noticing that too, Ms. Garth. I'm really suspicious of that law. The same situation exists on the Illinois side, where when a student enters college, the college no longer has an obligation to share with the parents the student's progress. And I think that's the real mistake. And I think legally, the schools and the state legislatures that passed that are out of sort. I think they're out of line, and I don't see a reasonable basis for that, because like you say, just like you said, if the schools take money from the parents,
that's right,
they loan money, then why can't those parents be involved in the academic advancement of their students, their children?
Absolutely. And the sad thing about it is that the parent plus loan, they will call you over and say, we need your signature on this parent plus loan, but you remain neutral and you have no say-so over this child's grades, and we don't have to send them to your home. And I'm looking at these people saying, have you lost your ever-loving mind? I am putting up my hard-earned money to see the outcome of what the end's going to be. I want to see those grades.
The flip side of this is it could be a political arm which attempts to keep parents out of the picture so that they don't have to be made accountable to what goes on in these institutions.
Absolutely.
And we've got to fight that. We can't stand for that.
Oh, that's got to be fought,
no,
because in the Caucasian universities, you better believe mom and dad had a say-so over that child's social life and was involved in everything. We as African Americans, we don't know protocol, so we think this is all new, so we go along with the program just to get along. But the dean, you have access to the dean. And I encourage all the parents that are listening, if you are having problems infiltrating your child's school to find out about their grades or to get progress reports on various things, you could go to the dean and indicate to the dean that you need her to make contact so that you can get an inlay as to when those quarterly grades will be coming out. And they also are coercing these children to get private loans, which are not due 6 months after they graduate. They do immediately, and they're private loans with higher interest rates. After they say they've exhausted all of the unsubsidized loan, then they put them into a private loan, and then they go after them while they're still in school and encumber their records.
And, Ms. Garth, another thing I think that brings to mind the manner in which credit cards, card machines have proliferated college campuses, and how students have access to these credit card applications. And by, just like you pointed out, by the time they get out of school, they may have a credit card 24 to 32% interest, and they're financially stuck. They start out stuck. And that's why I cannot understand these institutions barring parents from being involved.
One of the problems that's going on here in the state here where Purdue University resides in Calumet, is there's an overwhelming dropout of black males that was drawn to the attention of the dean, and they brought in an investigator to find out why the large numbers of black males going into enrollment, but within 4 years, those numbers drop. They fall through the cracks. So they brought an investigator in to observe these young black males, to also do surveys on them, and to find out what was the sensitivity problem and why were they not faring well in these institutions. And it's still a problem where they are now still constantly trying to recruit black men and women because they can get their financial aid up front. They don't care if you drop out the next semester. They got your money.
Right, yes, ma'am.
That's a problem.
And that's a real tragedy, a real tragic situation, because it's about education. Everything we've talked about this evening, I always have said education is the equalizer, and we've got to get the message out there so that our young people will finish school and so that they can compete, because, as you know, it's not just a national competition, but now we live in a global society.
That's right.
And it's just a fact of life. Education is a must.
Oh, yes. And we always say in this room up under Project 2019, we have an investigation going that between now and year of 2019, we want to measure how many young people have gotten higher education and gone on to graduate. So by the 2019 is the 400 years that we would have been out of slavery. And it seems like as though we're going backwards. There are less of us that are coming out of these higher level of institution. So there's a big problem. So we always tell them knowledge is power, meaning that the more knowledge you get, you open up doors. So we had launched an effort to bring knowledge abroad to close the gap of illiteracy, and above all, to make sure those parents know that you can go somewhere and get help with your reading didactics and learn to read. And now you can go and find help through the Junior Achievement to get some help with your financial literacy. We don't want to be the permanent underclass, and we also want to be able to measure up and compare ourselves to other races. At the same time, we're not asking for nobody to give us nothing. Just open up the door. We can get it ourselves. We want to become self-reliant. We want to depend on our own resources, and we want to be able to name for ourselves, define for ourselves, and also to plant our organic gardens and provide food for ourselves. So we want to be self-sufficient. And Attorney Bray, our whole effort in this room is to make people more spiritually conscious and understand that we have rituals and that our ancestors are yet with us, because those are the shoulders we stand on. That's what makes us so unique. We are called to the spirit, and we are responsive to the spirit, and we don't do anything by the lust of the flesh, because we know the lust of the flesh is what kill it. And we are waiting for the spirit to move on us, to give us direction. That is what's so unique about this room. We call to prayer, and we are led by the spirit. So, Attorney Bray, I'm going to ask you to give us a summary of what you think this country needs to get us back on track because of a economic crisis that have gone on, and the rich getting richer and robbing from the poor and paying less taxes in a less tax bracket. Can you elaborate on that?
I would love to. You know, I think right now in 2011, I think our country more than ever before needs to focus on people problems, people solutions. And we are going to have to tackle social issues. I think it has become apparent that when one side of town or one side of the country has a problem, eventually that same problem will travel. So we're going to have to start dealing with these social issues, education. We've got our young we've got to keep them busy doing positive things, but education, and job creation over and over again. We've got to work to keep jobs in this country. So we've got to really work on urging people around the country to elect representatives who are people oriented. Who, when we talk about special interest groups, well, we need people who are focus on the special interest of helping the average person educate them, their children, educate themselves, taking care of the families. Those are the key issues as I see it. I know I'm trying to squeeze it all in just a few minutes, but that is what I would put a focus on. I think it is vital. And there's an attorney in Florida by the name of Willie Gary. I have high regard for him. A few years ago, I had an opportunity to meet him and talk with him. He's an African-American attorney, and he reminded me, look, we're all in this together. Ms. Garth, that is why, that's what fuels my passion, because what affects me affects my fellow man. We're all interrelated, and I think more emphasis on that will certainly help build our country and move us in the right direction.
Very good. And I can concur with what you're saying. Right about now, we're going to go to a phone line. We have Dr. Jamel on the line. And Dr. Jamel, we're talking about a solution for our economic status and the collapsing of the state, the United States, which is seeking to become the United States of Africa. What can you tell us about if we align ourselves with Africa's mission and become dual citizenship? What could possibly happen for the African-American person? And is this an option where we can get dual citizenship and go back to the motherland? Can you please help us out on that? This is Dr. Jamel Harvey. He is one of our naturopathic doctors in residence.
Well, there's a tie-in here. Your health is your wealth, first of all. An unhealthy nation is a poverty-stricken nation. I think every black person in America needs to identify with their African roots. I think every black person in America should incorporate a business. I think every black person in America, if possible, should take a trip to Africa and make a link. I think every black person in Africa, if possible, should get into the import and export trade. I think that every black person in America should definitely own property, and that, you know, white America has to really, really look at their role in collapsing the housing market. That's where you find the dethroning of the middle class. So all that was done purposely. The facts will bear that out. But black America has to take the responsibility to educate our children that health is first, and with a healthy body, healthy mind, you can obtain the wealth that you so desire. And making that link with Africa, it is something that we should strive to do first and foremost. We really should. But we should never lose sight of the fact that the indigenous people of America were black Americans. The Indians that you think were the Indians, you have to do your history. The Choctaw, the Seminole, the Shoshone, those tribes in the southeastern part of the United States in 1830s, those were black people. Those were black Indian tribes. When you do a study of the racial identity of the Eskimo Indian, the Indian that they put on your nickel, the Indian, the red man Indian, that's a different nationality. When you do a chart of the indigenous African American Indian tribes in America, you'll find that on the Trail of Tears, you would have what you would call black Indians that look like you and I. Not much is told on that, but you really have to do that research. Some of us are indigenous to North America, okay? The back to Africa thing is a beautiful thing. Make sure that your DNA and your bloodline goes that far back. But a lot of our DNA derived from North America. During the time of Pangaea, before the planet separated, you had tribes from Africa that were indigenous to this side. Pangaea is when all the land masses were together and you had earth changes, and that's when you had the divide between Africa, South America, and North America, thus making the Atlantic Ocean. That's a geological fact. So, you know, we really have to study the things that have happened to us before we get into big movements. I support going back to Africa, but I support going back to Africa from a standpoint of go back to Africa with a business, go back to Africa with technology, go back to Africa being able to bring its infrastructure up, go back to Africa with a legal and business mind to support the systems that need to be supported if you're going to live there or do dual citizenship. There's no sense in going to Africa and the sanitation systems are just defunct. There's no sense in going to Africa and you can't drink the water or you can't function or live the way you do here. So there's a lot of economic development that can be made for black Americans if you go to Africa with the mindset of building infrastructure and bringing something to Africa to help build it up, other than looking for Africa to give you something like safety and security. Go there with the responsibility of what you've learned here and to build Africa up with infrastructure development. So I know I said a lot of things that sound scattered, but if you really take a deep look at it, it all comes together. It's all connected together. Again, a healthy mind is a wealthy pocket. Okay?
Dr. Jamel Harvey, you mentioned the wealthy mind as, well, a healthy mind is a wealthy mind. Now, we normally go to you to talk with you about situations that deal with health, and we've been talking over the week about various different wellness programs. What would you make as a recommendation for living longer? Age is now a factor. Women are living longer, and there are secrets that we keep of how to stay long and have longevity. I know that in our family we have longevity. There's a number of us that live to be over 100, and my sister, who has gone on, some of them, to live to be 80, and I'm coming up on 60. So I'd like to know, what would you say that we ought to be reaching for if we're looking for longevity so that we can stay in the race at the same time remaining youthful? What are some of the youth aids that you can recommend to the listening audience?
Simple things that you can do is strive for purity. And what does that mean? That means that everything that you drink, think, eat, or do should be done with the standpoint of purity. For instance, if you drink beverage, okay, should you drink Pepsi Cola or Sprite? From a standpoint of purity, both have carcinogens in them, or both have a substance that would aid to help developing disease in your body. So why even drink that drink? You know, drink an alkaline water, or drink a beverage that is clear, that doesn't have colorations and dyes and a lot of preservatives in them. When it comes to food, why would you eat foods that are laden with preservatives or nitrates or certain chemicals? Try to eat the purest of food, the fresh food, fruits and vegetables. Why clog your body up with unnecessary meats? Okay, you don't really need that. So you have to look at longevity from a standpoint of building up your cells. And how you build up your cells is real simple. Fruit, vegetables, and pure water. Less meat, but more nutrition in the body. Less sugars. A combination of sugars and salt makes up too much knotted up mucus in the colon. So you want to get into purity. Everybody has a different level, so you have to seek out as a person what your tolerance, what you can do and what you can't do in terms of your dietary standards. But it's about purity. Strive for the purity in which you were created. That's very simple, but it takes a person to journey down that path to know what is good for him or her.
Brother Jamel, can you elaborate at all on some of the unique secrets that have been held to be, even in our dynasty of the kings and queens, of the oils, the essential oils, as well as understanding that all oils are not alike? The essential oils are something we have to replenish. And coconut oil, the various different oils that are broken down that the body has to live with for their amino acid. Can you speak on the beauty and the beautification of using oils for a woman?
Well, if you're talking about external perfume or oils for fragrance.
No,
right?
The internal oils.
Internal oils, well, mm-hmm. Then you have to look at, we are given our omega-3 oils, and that's good. Your basic oils would definitely be an evening primrose oil. You would have to deal with certain levels of fish oils that are good for your body internally. So when you look at the oils that are good for antioxidant benefit, okay, you have to research those. That's not flowing off the top of my head, but the oils that will help for antioxidant, because antioxidant does what? It helps take oxidation from a cellular level and from a tissue level. So you want to get the oils that are good for antioxidant. I say evening primrose oil. I say olive oil. Simon oil, North American saltwater fish oils would be very good for you. So you have to look at those types of oils with oxidation, with antioxidant principles that could really, really, really help you if you're talking about internal oils. All right. The evening primrose oil would be good because it helps with the pituitary, it helps with the thyroid gland, it helps with the regulatory systems in the body. And there are other oils that you have to research that could be best for your body type and for what you're going through.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jamil. Now, normally on this show, ladies and gentlemen, we have our segments that we speak about under family life education. And because our guest was here, we've incorporated that topic under this segment to get all of our questions in. Now, our family life segment would have been talking about getting your kindergartens ready for kindergarten over the summer. I'm going to talk with you more about that process, but there is a wave going across the nation, at least in the northern Indiana area, of getting kindergartners ready to go to kindergarten during the summer and providing them with all of the necessary skills and test-taking skills that they need. And that's all I'm going to say on that topic this evening, but we will address that again, family. So make sure that you call in on that. Now, we also have a show on this particular segment called Always Sisters, Always Friend. And right about now, we're going to thank our guests, Mr. Muhammad. We're going to give him the last word and thank him for coming out. And we will be supporting you, Mr. Muhammad. And we're going to ask you to come back again to visit our show. And we can dedicate information for you to disseminate on this particular airways. And we want to thank you for all of your resources. And please do stay in touch. Mr. Muhammad, yes, do you have any last words or any updates you want to give the people before?
Well, I would just like to ask the listening audience to continue to support your show. I think you're doing a great job. I appreciate all the comments that were made by all of the guests on the show tonight. Would strongly encourage those who were listening tonight, if you know anyone in Lake County, Indiana, in the Gary area, that would benefit from being present at the Expungement Informational Forum on Saturday, June the 18th, Boys and Girls Club in Gary, 225 West 5th Avenue. The presentation will begin promptly at 12 noon, and we're going from 12 to 5. Again, we're going to have free HIV testing, glucose, and blood pressure screening being administered by the Gary Health Department technicians. Or additionally, Ms. Dodd, on June the 25th, the Gary Commission on the Social Status of Black Males is also sponsoring a disaster preparedness forum, a workshop. Okay. We have a trainer out of Chicago, Illinois, that's very versed in the area of disaster preparedness training. She's going to train from 9 to 5 on how to survive in your home for 90 days during a disaster. That is going to be hosted at Edgewater Systems for Balanced Living in the auditorium at 1100 West 6th Avenue in Gary. Registration donation for the workshop is $20, and that does include lunch. And for more information on that, you may contact me at 219-880-2284. Don't hesitate to call to register. And again, thank you, and I look forward to being on your show sometime in the future, Ms. Garth.
And thank you so much, Brother Muhammad. Brother Muhammad, I also wanted to tell you that if you go online under Blog Talk Radio and look under Care to Read, you can download this segment of this tape-recorded interview, and you can have it for your desktop, and you can also forward it on and attach it to other emails for other people to listen to if you like. So we want to welcome you back again. Brother Muhammad and I have worked together for years, and we always seem to get a teacher-student relationship. So Brother Muhammad has been a good student, and he's worked with me under several projects, and I look forward to working with him under this expungement program because I'm so grateful that he finally found someone to help him get this program off the ground. And I certainly intend to be a part of what you're doing, Brother Muhammad, and to support you. So definitely call on me, and I do look forward to meeting with you and your wife so we can go and break bread together, okay?
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Garth. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Take care. Take care. Take charge, and God bless.
All right. Thank you so much, then. That was Brother Muhammad, ladies and gentlemen. Brother Muhammad has been a part of this community grew up with him, went to school with him, went off to college, and I got a chance to see him again in college. And I never knew that I would, you know, be in my adult years coming back working with him. But he's a very, very strong and hard worker. I see in him the potential to be a good lawyer. Maybe God will use him in that direction. But he's certainly a fighter for the cause. And we want to get behind him and say, go ahead on, Brother Muhammad. Go ahead on, Brother Muhammad. Ladies and gentlemen, around about this time, we do our Always Sisters, Always Friend. But I think I put that co-host to sleep, so we want to wake her up. Mrs. Harvey, this is my oldest sister, and as well as my mother. I used to take my commands from her. Now I give her commands and directions, and she finds that kind of hard to do, taking direction from her baby sister. So stay tuned for Always Sisters, Always Friends. We're going to get Shug Avery's out here to tell her like a T.I. is, and she can explain it to you more than I can. Always sisters, always friends. Always sisters, always friends. Always sisters, always friend. We like to bring this show to you because the uniqueness of our family growing up with 18 children and 11 girls make it so unique. And we are going to attempt to bring each one of those 11 girls on to fraternize with you and talk to you about our family life and perhaps give you some directions for how best to raise young girls. And that's what we're attempting to do with the Always Sisters, talk to you about various different topics that can frequent your home pertaining to just girls and women trying to get along. Now let's hear Miss Seeley Blues, and we're going right into Always Sisters, Always Friends. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another segment of Always Sisters, Always Friend. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Mrs. Harvey. Let me say hello to Mrs. Harvey. Hello, Mrs. Harvey. How are you?
How are you? Just fine. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I'm praying for your voice to clear up, and we're glad that you can join us today. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had a wealth of information go on today. I hope you've locked that dial in at 646-478-0270. You don't want to forget to call in this evening. We've been talking about a variety of things under Always Sisters, Always Friends. As you know, we talked about the family reunion last time. Now, we've also talked about having friends who have dated their prior boyfriends. And if you haven't heard the segments, you want to go out and listen to them on demand. Tonight's segment will be talking about how do you handle those friends with jealousy and envy issues. How do you keep those friends without having to scold them or reprimand them about their jealousy problem or envy problem? So, what does your friend think that you have that they don't have if you're both females? And anything that you can get, they can get. Why don't they see it that way? Anything you can do, they can do, or possibly better. But they don't seem to see it that way. They constantly are at you about you've got the better deal. They're constantly telling you, but you've been favored and you've always had opportunities that they didn't have. They're always feeling sorry for themselves, always bringing the spirit down when you're around them, and you know that it's coming, that it always comes around the same time. They become so argumentative, and they begin to feel sorry for themselves, and they throw things in your face, feeling envious and jealous. I want you to know envy is as greener than mucus. And you don't want mucus around, so you want to get rid of envy. And jealousy is yellow as pus, and you don't want pus around you either, so you want to get rid of pus and envy and mucus. So what are you going to do about it? You're going to take that friend aside and explain to them that God is no respecter person. What he has done for you, he will do the same thing for them. They just have to open up and be a good friend in order to have a good friend. Now, I was always told when I was a young girl, you must be a good friend to have a good friend. And I would always ask, what must I do to get a good friend? And I realized as long as I could practice being a good friend, I would be able to make anyone my friend. I don't know if there was ever anyone that I couldn't get along or make into a friend. Usually I would tell people, I eventually am going to make that enemy into a friend. And you can do that, ladies and gentlemen. Pride yourself on practicing being a friend and winning people over with your kindness. And once you win them over, they will begin to see that there was really no controversy between you and her anyway. It was just that they were tired of you getting called up front, getting all the trophies when they were lazy and didn't want to put the time in, and they felt that you were supposed to share that moment with them. Don't let them do it to you, ladies and gentlemen. Talk to your friend and tell them if they don't straighten their act up, they're going to have to find their own tribe and they can't reside within your circle anymore. It's okay to put somebody outside your circle, but just do it with love. Tell them you will love them from a distance, or you'll love them with the love of the Lord. But you can't keep that excess mucus and pus around. How can one or two walk together except they both agree? Now, if you don't put that person in the proper place, I guarantee you the same behavior that they are demonstrating in their envious and jealousy will rub off on you. You've got to categorize your friend and making sure they measure up. And from time to time, survey them and let them know, this is not what I want to become. You have grown into something that I don't want to be a part of. Jealousy is crueler than the grave. I am just sorry. I can't go with you on envy. You've got to tell them, at the same time respecting them and giving them their space. Once they've had enough space time, they will come to grips with their angry, obsessed behavior and then they won't be able to stand themselves. Let's go to the phone lines right about now and ask Mrs. Harvey her opinion on the topic of envy and jealousy, or shall I say pus and mucus. Mrs. Harvey, you have the airways.
Thank you. The only thing I can say is with some women who are jealous of what you have and they don't have, they don't realize that they can get what you have. It's just a matter of time. But the thing of it is that most women, some women grew up like that. Excuse my voice. Some women feel like that. They're jealous of you because you are better looking than they are. You have better, your clothes are better, your hair is better. And they're just jealous. But the thing you can do is sit your friend down and let them know that it's no reason to be jealous, because materialistic things that I have, you can have them too. If you don't have them now, it's just a matter of time before you get them. And let them know. Invite them to go to Sunday school with you one Sunday, and let them know that God loves us all, and he didn't make one of us no better than he made the other one. So let them know that you love them and you care about them, and try to talk to them about jealousy, because envy and jealousy will get you nowhere. And it doesn't. Envy and jealousy do not go along with friendship. And if you love your friend, you're going to reduce that envy and jealousy, and you're going to talk to them and show them how not to have it.
Mrs. Harvey, we certainly concur with you on that topic and your opinion on that. And we're going to ask the listening audience to think within themselves, when was the last time you was jealous of your friend? Or when was the last time one of your friends was envious of you? Have you discussed it, or have you distanced yourself from that person and refused to discuss it? I want to encourage you to go back to that friend, have an open line of communication, and discuss it. Now, we're talking about becoming green with envy. Ugliness is ugliness, but beauty is skin deep. Let me talk to you a little bit about beauty being skin deep and understanding how you can see the heart. And beauty is really actually on the heart of the disposition of the person. As we age, ladies and gentlemen, we have to age gracefully. And some women don't know how to age gracefully. They stay angry, in an uproar, and they're in confrontations continually. That causes them to be in a flight or fright, and they're constantly going through all kinds of emotion and causing their sensitivity to be examined. And at the same time, their emotions are fluctuating as if they're going through a hormone roller coaster. We as aging women, or women who are getting up in age, have to be very, very careful that we don't harness ourselves to slowly age when keeping our emotions under control. As rolling up on the age of 60, it's very important that we keep ourselves poised and eating the right thing and thinking the right thing. Do you know your thoughts are chemical expressions and can be chemically damaging to your body? Your thoughts. And all you are is nothing but a thought. So as a man thinketh, so is he. If we allow ourselves to intercept our thoughts with negative thoughts of other people, or thinking wrong thoughts about people and not knowing it to be true, I was always taught, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things be of a good report, think on those things. Allow your brain to be guided. Don't let your brain run all over the place and picking up all kinds of airways of wrong and incorrect thinking. Because your brain and your mind first manifest this thought first before they permeate it into a natural action. Now, being evil and envious and hating someone because you think that person has an advantage over you. Why not take advantage of the options you have yourself and center your thoughts around being in competition with yourself and not the outside world? Because once you're in competition with yourself, you can better yourself. And you're never the loser because you're always perfecting. Africans perfect all the time in whatever they're doing. They perfect so well that they keep trying to better themselves. And you can't better yourselves if you're not helping the other person do better. Envy is cruel. Envy is something that you want to put out in the trash. Because once you realize you're hindering yourself from being envious, then you want to get rid of that trait. It's a lower expression of your emotion, meaning that it is not a higher level spiritual state. And as you begin to climb up the ladder of the tree of life to a more spiritual life, you will lose those traits in the physical. But it is a concept. Envy and jealous are concepts that must be worked out in the spirit realm. You just can't stop being envious. Oh, girl, why don't you stop being envious? Oh, no, you being jealous again, you got to give it up. It's not that easy. They have to go into the spirit realm, and they have to lay it on the altar, and they have to see themselves walking out their spirit and being accommodating and loving without the accents or the attachment of envious and jealous. They have to work that thing out in the spirit because it's a lower extremity. It is an avenue that has to be worked out. You just don't stop being envious and jealous. It has to be worked out in the spiritual. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to take hold of what we're saying. I don't want to find out you're wasting time being envious to your girlfriend or your old buddy, and you and her are not speaking anymore because you just can't stand to be around her because of her envious behavior. You got to approach that person. You got to sit down with them, and you got to help them go back through the process of meditating to focus in on that negative trait so that they can alleviate it in the subconscious mind. And boy, when they come up from that water and emerge to the outside world, they'll begin to lose those traits each and every day, and they'll have less and less of envy following them and less of mucus jealousy following them. And that's all it is. You're going to have to go in the subconscious world to alleviate yourself of these negative traits. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to say hello again to my listening audience and say thank you for being a part of Always Sisters, Always Friends. You can always count on getting some tidbits and some jewels and diamonds from this segment because we're trying to teach you how to live. For those of you who are middle-aged women who are thinking yourself to be old and that are going into the years of the 60s, it's a beautiful thing, ladies. Omi is almost approaching 60, and I'm a beautiful woman. Fine, I've been told, and aging beautifully. You ought to let yourself age beautifully. Do not let the hidden cause of envy make you green as pew. Do not let that jealousy make you mucusy where nobody wants to touch you with a 10-foot pole. Stay confident in yourself. Stay on top of things and managing yourself, then you won't have time to manage anyone else. Boy, it's enough just trying to manage Omi. I'm telling you, sometimes I can't even manage myself. I'm up in the room saying, I'm going to have a discussion with Omi, and Omi got to get some things together, but I don't have time to be judging other women. I'm too busy judging Omi. That's right. Take some time up with yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Don't waste time finding negative thoughts in other people and envying what they can or cannot do. God is no respecter of person. What he's done for Sally over there, he wants to do for you. Just allow him to. Be a good steward and make yourself available to him, and he will use you. I declare he'll use you. Let me talk to Miss Harvey about God using her in situations to better women. Mrs. Harvey, can you tell us an occasion when you were used by God to help advance women in their stages as they develop into womanhood?
I think there's a lot of times when you're being used and you don't realize it at first, but as you get along and see the change in the ladies, then you know that God used you to bring them out of the state of mind that they were in. And it's very important that when you see one of your friends in that state of mind with that envy or jealousy or whatever they have, try to help them to overcome that. And then when you help them to overcome it, then you realize that God has used you to bring to help bring that person out of that situation.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, as I was saying to you, there are some habits that have to be broken in the spirit because they're not an actual attribute or a DNA trait. It usually is a learned behavior, but it has to be worked out in the spirit. And just as young people understand that under certain ages, children don't know how to become jealous under a certain age because they are not at that critical level where they can conceive jealousy. It's a trait that can be adhered to and picked up. But we have to be very careful of the fact that as we govern our beatitudes, we will develop healthy attitudes, taking them from the spirit realm, always trying to elevate ourselves up in the atmosphere, in the spirit realm. But if we stay in the lower extremities, we're going to get in trouble because this is where the animalistic level is, which we allow ourselves to do things that are not natural. So we want to purpose in our heart that we take our meditation to another level. As we meditate, we go up the tree of life to the more spiritual realm, at the spiritual realm of zero. I want to implore each and every one of you to meditate on a regular basis. And as you meditate, it beautifies you. It allows you to age slowly. And it gives you that particular shine of glory, Shekinah glory, that God is in you and that God is working out your situation through you. So it's very, very important that you understand that as you begin to work with your inner peace and your inner body, everything about you will start to glow, and that beauty that's skin deep will shine forward. And as you age and go into those levels of 60 range, you will find yourself being just as beautiful and trimline and happy and relevant and radiant to people as you've always been. You have to remember, if we are becoming angry constantly and our moods are fluctuating, it is affecting our disposition and our aura. We want our aura to be beautiful and be vibrating. So take a message from Omi. Don't allow envy and jealousy to take over you. And ladies, don't put up with the envious or jealousy relationship. You don't have to tolerate it. You can put it on the line, make your statement, and separate yourself from it. I want you to be a better people. I want you to be able to have friends. I want you to be able to overcome any situation and make others your friends, because you have the ability to do that through being kind. Kindness with kindness, loving kindness, have I drawn thee. I hope I've drawn one of you today to tune in again to our segment on Always Sisters, Always Friend. Always Sisters, Always Friend. Now, I'm sure most of you, like Erica Badu, say you want to be loving. You want somebody to walk up behind your neck and kiss you on your neck. You want to be that radiant beauty queen that always is drawing and always is perfecting. Remember, perfect today. Don't become jealous. Become better. And I know you can do it. I know you can, because it's in you, it's in you, it's in you. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back at you on Monday with Always Sisters, Always Friends. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Care to Read Room as we covered our topic today. Is financial literacy the solution to college education? We want to thank our guests, Attorney Beard, and also Brother Muhammad and Dr. Jamel, and our co-host, Maddie Harvey. We want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of the tribe today. And ladies and gentlemen, you can anticipate getting a full-service program right here in the Care to Read Room. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been fantastic to work with, and I do enjoy you coming in here. Let's go to station identification.
Malcolm X, for Dudley Randall. Original, ragged round, rich robust. He had the hawkman's eyes. We gasped. We saw the maleness raking out and making guttural the air and pushing us to walls. And in a soft and fundamental hour, a sorcery devout and vertical beguiled the world. He opened us, who was a key, who was a man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for that segment that you just heard, the poetry, Malcolm X. We also want to encourage you to frequent this room and be a part of this room. As you know, today is Thursday, and we normally come on Friday, and we whoop it up on Friday. And since we're not able to be here on Friday, we had to move our show up a bit. We want to engage you with whooping it up today. Right before we go out of here, we kick it up, and we want to encourage you to make sure you're joining us on Monday. Now, Monday is going to be another day of talking about, is financial literacy the solution to our problem? And as we told you, we are partnering with Junior Achievement so that we can utilize their great resources, and we encourage you to do the same thing, parent. Hook your children up so they can learn about finances and they don't waste their money and their time in these institutions called college, that they learn before they go to college how to balance their checkbook, how to work with that filthy lucre when they get their refund checks. Stay tuned. We're going to Dirty Dozen, and let's move the tears back so we can whip it up. about to check out of here. I'm out of here, ladies and gentlemen. And I say, oh, double, and I'll see you tomorrow. Come on. Out of here, but we will be back on Monday, and we want to thank you for lending us your airwaves. We now give you your airwaves back to you unmolested. We want to thank you for continuing to believe in us and support us, and to all you Twitterers out there who are Twittering me and following me, thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is a family organization. You are now a part of the family. You are in the family way. Come back again and join us. You're welcome in my home anytime. And I say, oh, double. And Baba Booey to you, y'all. See you on Monday. Take care and have a good weekend.